Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Daytona Beach International Airport, offering new nonstop service to New York City and Boston, Massachusetts, beginning December 4th. Daytona Beach International Airport features convenient access to the terminal, easy and close parking, and more. Details at flydab.com.
I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Middleton, along with Bill Schaefer, and this is Growing Bolder, which, of course, is the show about ordinary people who are doing extraordinary things. And, you know, you can do that, too. And why not? Why settle for a life that is anything less than extraordinary?
Yeah, and I want to caution people here. You don't have to be rich or famous to do it. In fact, it's usually just the opposite. Growing Bolder is about pursuing your passions, about finding a way to not only enjoy every day, but to make a difference in the lives of the people that are around you.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bill. On today's show, folks, we've got a poetry pioneer who knows something about the millions of Americans now suffering from Alzheimer's that actually has the potential to dramatically change their quality of life.
Yeah, and we have a two-time Academy Award nominee who, wow, they've also won a Golden Globe, an Emmy, and a Tony, whose new film is all about discovering that you're never too old to learn. And the 70-something Superman who's on a mission to prove that you can get stronger with age. That and more is coming up on Growing Bolder. Do you know what boomers fear more than anything? More than cancer, more than cardiac disease? Alzheimer's disease, and there's good reason to fear it too. Nearly 50% of all people in their 80s and above develop Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia. It's now the sixth leading cause of death in the United States and is the only cause of death among the top 10 that cannot be prevented, cured, or even slowed once it starts.
Yeah, it's a great point, Bill, which is why we are very excited today to have in the studio a woman who is actually at the vanguard of those who are dealing with one of the most pressing healthcare issues in history. Her mission is to improve the quality of life for Alzheimer's and dementia patients, and she's doing that by pioneering a new way to not only engage, but also to creatively stimulate this large and unfortunately growing group. She now travels nationally, not only speaking, but conducting facilitations, workshops, seminars, training programs, and more. She is the creator of Mind's Eye Poetry. Let's welcome Molly Middleton Meyer. Hey, Molly, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thank you.
We are so pleased to have you stop by. And as bad as those numbers are that Bill just quoted, they're only going to get worse. What do people in your field mean when they talk about the so-called Alzheimer's tsunami?
What they mean about that is that there's a growing segment. Obviously, the boomer segment is growing older, and life expectancy still, you know, continues to go up, fortunately. But as Bill mentioned, if you're lucky enough to live into your 80s and beyond, your chances of developing the disease increases dramatically. So it is a scary thing. The statistics are terrifying. But, you know, I believe that there's a new way to look at the disease, and that's what I'm trying to do.
All right, before we take a look at the new way, let's do lay out some of those numbers, because as you say, they are frightening. Over 5 million people in the U.S. today are living with Alzheimer's. That number, folks, is going to jump to 16 million by 2050. And here's really one of the more frightening things. The direct cost to care for these patients in America alone, $214 billion today, will skyrocket to $1.2 trillion in 2015. So you make a living now, Molly, going to memory care assisted living homes and engaging these patients. What do you know about them that we don't?
What I know about them, what I've discovered, is that there is a long time where a person with Alzheimer's, a person living with Alzheimer's, is actually living. They have the capacity to experience joy. They understand kindness. They can love. They can laugh. They are creative individuals, and so many times that is overlooked, and they aren't engaged. And when they are engaged, I'm finding that it is an empowering feeling for them, because so many times they are written off, or they're given activities that are demeaning, or the reverse. They're given activities that are so challenging that they feel inept, inadequate, or embarrassed. So it's kind of trying to find that right mix that engages and empowers them.
But of everything you could have pulled upon, you know, I've heard people do it with music. You do it through poetry facilitation, which seems on the surface that would be awfully complicated. How do you do that?
You know, it really isn't that complicated. When you think about poetry, at least the way I think about it, is that it's sort of verbal music. There's a rhythm that's inherent to it. And, you know, I feel like everybody on some kind of primal level can relate to that rhythm. And it's just really the way that it's presented. I sometimes use great poetry, poetry that's considered, you know, the top of, you know, what we consider to be the greatest literature ever written. But most of the time, I just use poems that I find that I feel that are relatable, that might be memory triggering, and certainly will inspire some creativity.
You know, I think that's the part that surprises most people is that they do have memories there that you have figured out a way to tap into. And some of the caregivers we know, because we videotaped a session with Molly recently, folks, that we'll put on Growing Bolder TV very, very soon. But, you know, one of the interesting things that you've said, Molly, is that, you know, we all try to pull these people back. It is tragic that they have lost the relationships that defined their life for so many decades. And you say what we need to do is let that relationship go and establish a new one with them. You can't bring them back, so you got to go with them.
Absolutely, and it's so much easier said than done, especially for family members. You know, I lost both parents to Alzheimer's, so I'm speaking from some personal experience. That's the hardest thing there is to do is to not want to pull them back and to see what could easily be looked at as them moving away from us. But that's part of the beauty of what I do is I didn't know them before, so I just judge them as who they are today. And if we are willing to change our view, the lens that we look at them through, and go on the journey with them, amazing things can happen. It's magical, the things that I've experienced.
So we kind of get that they have lost the ability to remember the past and in some cases even dream about the future, but they still have something that many of us are still trying to achieve every day.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about living in the moment. It's something that we all consciously try to do. They just do it. That's what they have, is the moment. And I think when we're so preoccupied about them losing themselves or us losing them, we forget that we have that moment, and that moment is very fleeting. And if we don't take advantage of the moment with them, and inspire them and hopefully stimulate them in that moment is gone.
Folks, we're talking to Molly Middleton Meyer, who is the founder of Mind's Eye Poetry. And as I mentioned, she really is at the vanguard of a new way of thinking about Alzheimer's patients and, more importantly, engaging them. And Bill, if I may, a disclosure now. You know, I didn't want to say this until we got to this point of the interview, because we would be interviewing Molly no matter who she was, because what she's doing is amazing. But she is, in fact, my sister. And she mentioned that both of her parents were lost to Alzheimer's over an 18-month period, something that she lived through with my brother more than I, because they lived with my folks in Phoenix. And Molly, one of the really interesting things is, despite your master's degree in poetry, despite your research into dementia, you say that you learned much of what you do today from our brother Tom, who is really the antithesis of what most people would think of as someone who should know how to handle these patients.
Absolutely. Intuitively, he understood that it was about going on the journey with our parents. And at the time, you know, I just didn't have the skills. I mean, and I also was doing what so many Americans are doing, loved ones are doing. You know, I was handling finances. I was worried about selling their home. I was doing the other things. And interestingly enough, you know, there was a short period of time when our parents were in memory care facilities, and he dreaded going to see them there, partly because he did not like to see, you know, what he considered to be demeaning activities, or to see people that were further along in the disease process. He did not want to see it, and he didn't feel like it was beneficial for our parents to see it. So eventually both of them went home to live with him, and they had fun. He brought fun into their lives. He lived with them in the moment, you know, and he improvised depending upon the time of day, how they felt. you know, what they were interested in, what they were looking at. You know, our dad was on a motorcycle. You know, our mother, very creative, artistic. He basically brought a sense of play, not a childlike play, but tuned into what their interests were and just had fun with them. And, you know, I can honestly say their quality of life until the end of their life was phenomenal. And he just knew how to do this intuitively.
You know, he turned out to be a great caretaker, but there are so many that don't know what to do. And it takes quite a toll on the caregiver as well.
Absolutely. Without a doubt, Bill, they say that, and I truly believe it from having experienced it, that at a certain stage in the disease process, it is so much harder on the caregiver than it is on the person living with the disease. There's just so much guilt that goes along with it. There's fear that goes along with it. You know, it's hard to look into the eyes of a loved one and not think selfishly, is this going to be me? And you know, there are so many personality changes. You know, sometimes people that are very mild before the disease become contentious and will argue with you, and it depends on time of day. And it's exhausting work, especially if it's in your home and you're doing it 24/7. It's just absolutely exhausting. So I get it. But people are looking for new things, new ways to engage their loved ones. And, you know, because you're so overwhelmed and you're tired and you're avoiding your doctor's appointments because you're taking care of a loved one and you're not getting your sleep because somebody's wandering in the middle of the night, it's understandable that you're not thinking about, hey, maybe I could use some poetry or music or read or whatever connects with the person that you know, is living with the illness.
Just another major reason why this is a huge healthcare issue, what it does to caregivers. And folks, as you probably know, Medicare, public assistance, pays for very little, if any, of this. It is something you should look into now. Long-term care insurance is very expensive, but if you can afford it, now is the time to look into it, because once you're diagnosed, you can no longer get it. We've been very proud and honored to have Molly Middleton Meyer. Molly, thanks so much. Coming up, it was not all smooth sailing for the captain of the Love Boat. The dramatic inside story of Gavin McLeod's battle with alcoholism and depression. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures. The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. Our next guest you know from his beloved roles on shows like The Mary Tyler Moore Show and The Love Boat, but I'm telling you, you don't know the real story behind actor Gavin McLeod's rise to success.
Yeah, in his many iconic roles, he played mostly happy-go-lucky characters, but the reality of his life was far from the characters that he portrayed. And in a revealing interview with Growing Bolder, McLeod opens up about his battles with addiction and depression, and he takes us back to the night that he nearly ended it all with a suicide attempt. Before he hit it big, before he became a household name, Gavin McLeod was so poor, he made soup out of ketchup.
And that's what we did. We'd just take that ketchup bottle, and we'd get that hot water, and just make ourselves ketchup soup. And the big thing was, if I saved enough money, I would have a hot dog.
He's best known as Maury Slaughter from The Mary Tyler Moore Show and Captain Meryl Steuben from The Love Boat, two iconic characters from two of the most popular shows in television history. What you probably don't know is that it was a near disastrous turn on another classic show that ultimately led to McLeod's success.
Yeah, we can parade him right into Captain Binghamton's office.
While playing Happy Haines on McHale's Navy, McLeod was anything but happy. When good friend Ted Knight made a guest appearance, he questioned why McLeod would continue doing something that made him so unhappy.
She says, I got to tell you something. I said, you can't continue with this. You're a glorified extra. I said, Ted, I'm feeding the family. He said, well, what about you? You're feeding you? I said, no.
McLeod turned to the bottle to try and ease his pain and frustration.
But I reached the point
Well, I was so out of it. One night, I said, I'm going to end it. You know, I'm not worth anything to anybody. I didn't think about my kids. I didn't think about my wife.
So he drove his car to the top of Mulholland Drive in the Hollywood Hills to commit suicide by driving off of a cliff.
It was so vivid of how I was just really blind drunk, they call it, I guess. I said, this is it, and I started to go off. And just before the whole car went off, something took my foot. Something put my foot on that brake. It wasn't me, I was out of it. Something did that. So I finally came to, and I remember pulling back and saying, what am I gonna do? I can't even do this, you know?
He backed away from the cliff and drove to the nearby home of friend and fellow actor Robert Blake.
So I went to Robert's house. He said, oh, come on. He said, well, you have to get to my shrink. He'll help you. He'll help you.
After several sessions with Blake's therapist, McLeod was convinced that Ted Knight was right. The source of his unhappiness was an unfulfilling role on a show that kept him from auditioning for bigger, better roles.
I said, I have to get out of that show.
He quit drinking, he quit McHale's Navy, he devoted himself to a higher power, and the rest is television history.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
All set to head for the bounding main?
And if I had stayed with McHale's Navy, I don't know if I would have made it. I wouldn't be seeing you, and right now I don't think I would have lived. But because of that choice, because of what God has set up for me, I was always like a piece of clay that he has moved from place to place, go through this horrendous thing. But the love of God is my strength. The joy of God is my strength.
Now in his 80s, Gavin McLeod has been sober for more than 40 years. He's happier than ever and has no plans to slow down.
And you are no longer just growing older. You are growing bolder.
I am. I believe in boldness, especially now in my life. Listen, what's there to lose? What are they going to do to me?
You know, what a great guy who has finally found true happiness in his 80s. And Bill, another celebrity who has talked about the addiction and the depression that nearly conspired to end his life.
Yeah, I know you really can't talk about celebrities and depression and suicide these days without mentioning the tragic death of Robin Williams either, Mark. His death underscores the severity of depression and the importance of getting help.
Yeah, more than 20 million Americans now suffer from depression, and more than 100 commit suicide every day. And folks, aging baby boomers are the most at risk. The economy goes bad, marriages fail, jobs lost, health declines, and suddenly middle age doesn't look so good to many.
So listen, if you're depressed or think somebody close to you is, get help. As Gavin McLeod showed us, life in our 80s can be the best time yet.
Time now for our Surviving and Thriving segment. You know, with the right kind of care and support and the right attitude, it's possible to not only survive life's greatest challenges, but to thrive in the aftermath.
And what a great example for you today. Growing bolder, Cecily Wilson, a busy television journalist. She was run down. She was stressed out and had constant headaches. But you know, like a lot of us, she refused to slow down until she actually had a stroke. Cecily is fine now. But she's got this warning for the rest of us. Slow down and learn to say no.
I just ignored them, just thinking it was just only because of my crazy, hectic schedule and lifestyle at that moment. But, you know, there are times when those signs are literally right in your face and you ignore them. And that's what I did. I ignored them. But never again. I spend a lot of time now speaking to other women, especially women of color, who, because we are a lot more prone to fall to heart disease. But I speak to them and I tell them very candidly, you know, I know that my name begins with an S. I do have a blue cape. It's in the closet. But we are not super women. And so when we have the opportunity just to say no, say no. Because it really can make the difference. That could be your kryptonite and take you down. We don't want that. When you think about growing bolder, and it's not about age, it's about attitude, that is Cecily all day. Because, although I lie about my age half the time, I don't really know how old I am. I am growing bolder, but I'm so proud to be able to say that nothing is going to stop me from doing what I want to do. And when I hear these stories and I see the stories that are produced right here, I can do that. It inspires me, and it inspires others to do just the same thing. And hopefully my story, however small or however large it is, I'm hoping that my story will cause someone to say, you know what, if she did it, I can do it too.
Boy, some great advice, important words from Cecily. All right, coming up on Growing Bolder, one man with a desire to inspire, how he's giving hope to millions, next on Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider Newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
I am Bill Schaefer, along with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. You know, we talk a lot about finding meaning in our lives, about finding a way to pursue our passions, because that's where life gets good, and that's where you find true happiness.
Yeah, and it is something, Bill, that's different for each and every one of us, and our next guest is a rare combination of an out-of-the-box thinker, a dreamer, and a doer. He's always admired the nonprofit world, and over the years, he's been especially drawn to the work of the Livestrong Foundation, and the program that he created to support Livestrong's mission is one of the most unique, most powerful anywhere. Let's find out more as we welcome one of the co-founders of Survivor Summit, Mike King. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hey, you know, we really appreciate you taking some time to talk us through this. We absolutely love your story, because when it comes to finding a way to give back, it's really a great example of looking first at our own lives, of leveraging what we know and who we are to make a difference. And what I'm trying to say is, you didn't reinvent the wheel. You basically connected the dots that already existed in your own life. And let's start with that connection to your affinity for Livestrong. How did that begin?
Sure. So in about 2005, I had a brother who recommended that we went to do the Ride for the Roses, which is Livestrong's sort of signature fundraising event. And long story short, I went and was just so moved by how powerful it was to see these cancer survivors and their families riding bikes and crossing this finish line and receiving all these sort of special accolades. And it was just extraordinarily powerful. And I knew I wanted to be part of it, and I wanted to do more.
You know, Mike, Mark talked about a lot of the connecting of the dots that you had in your life. And you had a lot of dots. You're an MBA student at Wharton. You had interned at Livestrong, and you had this leadership program that you took at Wharton to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And then something brought all those together. What was it about that experience that made you think, you know, this could become like a Livestrong event? Because at first look, you'd think, no way.
Yeah, sure. So actually, we after doing that first Ride for the Roses, I continued. I have three older brothers, and we continued every year. And then in 2011, we were at a wrap-up party for the Ride for the Roses. And I had just recently done, as you mentioned, the climb to Kilimanjaro with my business school. And as we sat on a rooftop hearing stories about folks, these really inspiring folks who had started projects to help cancer survivors and supporters and Livestrong, my brothers and I sat there and thought to ourselves, boy, we could do something here, and let's brainstorm on what that might be. And like I said, I was fresh off my trip to Kilimanjaro with business school, and I started connecting the dots right there on the top of a rooftop bar in Austin, Texas. And a week or two later, we were successful in sort of launching the idea and getting buy-in from all the parties that we could take cancer survivors and their supporters to the top of Kilimanjaro for for just what we think is a really powerful experience.
So there you go, folks. There is the dreamer and the doer really in the same day, having an idea and figuring out how to make it happen. So you and your brothers, and really your father, Paul, who is a prostate cancer survivor, and a few friends dream up this idea of literally, as you said, taking cancer survivors to the top of the world's highest freestanding mountain to make a statement. And what is that statement, Mike? What does Survivor Summit tell the world?
Well, it tells the world that, you know, cancer is not going to stop these folks. You know, it certainly is a tough diagnosis and for them and their families. But this is a way for those cancer survivors and their families to just show that it's not going to stop them, and that, you know, they're able to break through the barriers that other folks may think cancer imposes on them. And it's just an incredible experience to see these folks all along the way and then make it to the top. And we hope that it sends that message that cancer will not stop you, will not slow you down. You'll still have the ability to live strong, and that's why we were so drawn to the message of live strong and wanted to partner with them.
You know, it really is an amazing idea, Mike, but unfortunately, most ideas that are out of the box like yours never get off the ground. How hard was it to take your dream and your passion and then convince Livestrong to get behind Survivor Summit and really understand the potential there?
Well, thankfully, I had some connections. As you mentioned, I interned at Livestrong, and so I knew how Livestrong thought. And, you know, their bike rides, a lot of their bike rides, if you think about it, they're putting out cancer survivors and their supporters to go ride, you know, 50, 100 miles on a bike. And so I like to think that we just sort of extended that distance a little bit and took it vertical. And so I knew that they were behind ideas like this that were, you know, empowering and uplifting to survivors and their families. And so when I was able to connect with Chris Warner, who's one of our lead climber, and really bring that legitimacy to it, that we could do this and we could make it happen. And we had this experienced professional guide. It kind of went from there and really took off.
Folks, we're talking with Mike King, who's one of the co-founders of Survivor Summit, an amazing program that is, got a lot of people talking. And, Mike, you reached the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro in the inaugural Survivor Summit in 2012. Your brother, Matt, and Chris Callahan, two of your other co-founders, were part of Survivor Summit 2014. And you just mentioned Chris Warner. As I understand it, Survivor Summit has a 100% summit rate, which is remarkable, almost unheard of. And a good deal of that credit has got to go to Chris Warner. I mean, this guy is an icon, isn't he?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, without Chris Warner, this doesn't happen, plain and simple. And the 100% success rate, I don't know the latest statistic. I think it's 20 or 30% of people who start make it to the top. But it just doesn't happen without his leadership and guidance. He is incredible.
So Mike, how do you get to go? Are people listening now? I mean, is it possible for them to go? Do you have to be a cancer survivor? Or what's the next step? You know, how do we all take part in this?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so you do not have to be a cancer survivor. We do look for folks who have a story, right? So you're a survivor, you're a supporter, and you have a story, and that really helps the experience and allows everyone to share in a common bond as they go up the mountain. And then as far as going or learning more, our website is survivorsummit.org, and you can get some more information there. You could also check us out on Livestrong's website under the partnered events section.
And folks, we should mention, that I was actually, proud to take part in Survivor Summit 14 with Mike's brother, Matt, and Chris Callahan, and Doug Ullman, the CEO of Livestrong, and Wendy Chioggi, who many of our listeners know. It was an incredible event. And, with Mike's help and Livestrong's help, we're now putting together a documentary that will be released very shortly. And it will give you a very good idea of what this trip, what this amazing expedition and adventure is all about.
Put you on the spot here, Mark. You know, we usually ask Mike what the takeaway is from that expedition. For you, for somebody seeing all this, what was the takeaway from climbing a mountain for the sake of cancer.
It's the most amazing bonding experience I had ever had. You know, you're stripped away of all of the things you're used to, and you can't get to the top without the support and the help of everybody. And as Chris Warner said, you'll learn to love one another and care more about them than you do yourself, or you won't make it. And it really is a metaphor for a battle of any kind, but in particularly a cancer journey, because you just don't think you can reach it when you first see it, but one step at a time, you make it.
Great talk with Mike King.
Coming up next, he's 70 and still growing strong, and we mean strong, very strong. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts. The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest.
My guard stood hard when abstract threats to noble to neglect.
Bill Schaefer here along with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. And I can't wait for this one, Mark, because our next guest will prove to all of us again it's never too late, not just to get in shape, but it's never too late to get in the best shape of your life.
Yeah, that was something unheard of not long
ago.
Well, this guy started lifting weights at the age of 44 just to relieve stress, and today at 70, he is a stereotype-smashing role model who actually looks younger today than he did when he started working out nearly 30 years ago. Let's find out more as we welcome Sam Sonny Bryant. Hey, Sonny, how are you?
Okay, good morning to everybody.
Hey, we appreciate you taking some time to chat with us. And before we learn what it's like to be you today, let's go back to the you before you started working out, because you really knew nothing about working out. You had zero experience lifting weights, and I'm guessing you really weren't in great shape.
Well, before I started, I was just working out. I would only do a little physical work, but I'd never been to a gym or worked out or anything. Well, when I first joined, I didn't know what to do. I just joined the gym, and I started lifting weights. That's all I was doing, lifting weights, lifting weights. And I started watching everybody else, and I started mimicking what they was doing. And I kept doing it, you know. I didn't notice my body changing, because that wasn't what I was there for. So I didn't notice the change in my body until one of the guys that operated the gym told me about a contest. So then everything else starts snowballing from there.
And how cool is that, Sonny? You know, part of the reason we wanted to share your story is because you had no intention or no idea that you were going to become some bodybuilder out of this. How did that happen?
That never crossed my mind. I didn't know anything about bodybuilding, be truthful about it. But back then, you know, there was nothing about bodybuilding, but the guys at the gym knew about it. So I wasn't a member of a gym or no, you know, club or nothing, so I didn't know nothing about bodybuilding, you know. And so my thing was to lift with relieve stress, and everything just starts snowballing. The more you get selected, the more you want.
Folks, we're talking with Sam Sonny Bryant, who is now 70 with the body of a young man. And I don't think Sonny's got a webpage, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sonny, and we'll pass that on. But if not, just Google Sonny Bryant, so you can see what this guy looks like. And Sonny, we've been told so long by so many people that it's impossible to not only maintain muscle mass and bone density as we age, that we're going to have to lose it. But you're proving that that's not true. Isn't that right?
Right. I think once your muscles get conditioned, then you don't really lose it. Just like taking a picture, you know, you always have that image in a picture. It might not look as sharp and clear as it did when you first took it, but you have that. You still have that image yourself. You know, because I really haven't lost no muscle. I don't think I'm going to gain more muscle, but I'm just trimming and shaping up and keeping it tight or whatever cut. You know, but I really don't follow the rules. You know, I'm an unorthodox trainer. You know, and I know Q departed the rules about working out in bodybuilding because they told me you can't work out 7 days and do this and do that. But I've been doing it for 7 days forever almost. Now I'm doing it 5 days a week, twice a day, and one day on Saturday, Sunday.
And here's something.
I work out 7 days a week.
That's awesome, Sonny, because that shows us what's possible, because you know what it's like. We have heard so many times that 70 is old, that at 70 you're supposed to be this worn-out, run-down, feeble guy. So how do you keep those thoughts and those images that I'm sure you hear also, how do you keep that out of your mind?
Well, I don't believe age makes you old. I think, well, I know age don't make you old. It's a mental attitude, you know, because you condition to believe that at a certain age you're old. And I always feel that your subconscious mind dictate what your body do. And if you think old, act old, then you're going to feel old and you're going to be old.
Folks, he's not just a bodybuilder. The guy's a philosopher. That is, he's dropping some words of wisdom on us.
I want that on a T-shirt. We should print those up and sell the Sonny Bryant T-shirts.
I'm gonna make a poster out of that and put it on our Facebook page. So, Sonny, say that again so I can get that correctly. If you think old,
you're gonna act old. Then you're gonna feel old. Then you're gonna be old. Let me tell you what changed my mind about this age and old philosophy here. This one, I was in Chicago just working, you know. But on Saturday and Sunday, me and my cousin parted, we have house parties in Edison. And I seen these elderly people party along with us. And I thought, one family, I thought they were a sister and brother, but they were mama and daddy and daughter.
Wow.
So, and I thought, you know, that's what, you know, give me a rude awakening. I said, now down south, people get a certain age, they work, come on, watch TV, go to bed, and get up. That's all they do. Work, come on, watch TV, get up and go to work the next day, and that's it. But these people, they live after they work, you know.
You know, folks, this is a smart man. I love when you said that you don't pay attention to the rules because, you know, our society beyond a certain age has been brainwashed by the images that the media tells us, by the words that, you know, everybody says we can't do these things. And Sonny, you've just ignored all of that to do your things. I got to ask you this really quickly because bodybuilding has a reputation to many as being unhealthy, an activity that has been fueled for many by steroids. Are there those who still look at you and say, man, this guy can't be natural, who think that you have to be juiced?
Well, I've been asked about steroids. People claim I was on steroids, which I'm all natural from day one. Never used steroids, never thought about it. All the guys at the gym tried to get me to get on steroids. I said, man, if you was on steroids, you'd be awesome. I could be awesome without steroids. It's all about health. After I get the bodybuilding thing, I start getting into this health ritual. I want to be healthy, too. See, I want to just look healthy. I want to feel healthy. If I feel healthy, I'm going to be healthy. You know, I'm doing so steroids will always out of the question for me.
How about another quick set of words of wisdom from Sonny Bryant? You got anything else for us?
No, that's it. I just tell people, you know, follow your mind. Do what you want. Don't let other people dictate what you could do or what your age focal limit you to. You know, because you can get through, but that's a commercial. I always heard that the body at rest, stay at rest, the body at motion, stays in motion. So you have to keep moving. You can get up and do something. Don't just sit there and feel sorry for it, just get up and do something. The more active you are, the more mentally alert you are.
We got to get up to Georgia and hang out with Sonny Bryant one of these days. Great guy, great interview. Sonny, thanks so much for your time. And folks, really do, Google Sonny Bryant and take a look at the pictures and realize that this guy is 70 years old. He's all natural. He works out, and he has totally transformed his life because he cares about holding off the effects of aging. Thanks, Sonny. Coming up, one of the most successful actresses of our time, and she's got the hardware to prove it. But her latest role is one of the most satisfying of her 50-year career. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Embrace the health and longevity movement with the Fountain of Youth monthly e-newsletter. Growing Bolder and the National Senior Games Association have teamed up to bring you the latest videos, podcasts, and articles on inspirational masters athletes and the many benefits of physical activity delivered right to your inbox. Just go to nsga.com/connect to sign up for free today. The Fountain of Youth, because if you want to keep moving, you have to keep moving.
The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest.
This is Growing Bolder. I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and boy, do we have a great guest now. The winner of 3 Emmy Awards, a Golden Globe, and a Tony. And you know how she got the Tony, Mark? She beat out Meryl Streep.
That doesn't happen.
Oh, nobody beats Meryl Streep. She's also got 2 Academy Award nominations. The first came when she was 19.
Yeah, she is the proverbial triple threat, an amazing list of stage, film, and TV roles spanning 50 years. She is still going strong with a lead role in the independent film Redwood Highway. Let's find out more as we welcome Shirley Knight. Hi, Shirley. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
You know, before we talk about your incredible career, your amazing longevity in an industry that seems to spit people out, tell us about Redwood Highway, which, by the way, folks, is now available on Netflix. You play a woman in her 70s who decides to walk 80 miles on foot. Is that true?
That's true, yes.
How many of those miles did you actually have to walk?
Well, you know, I wish I had worn one of those counting things because, you know, you do things several times. So I imagine I walked quite a bit. I don't know exactly how much, but I walked quite a lot. Of course, not all at once.
But you've described this as a very simple film with a profound message. What is the message?
Well, it's really rather wonderful. She's a woman who her son has put in the home, and she doesn't want to be there, and feels that she's still active, and it sort of worries her to be there because it reminds her of her life. She has too much time on her hands, and she loves to walk. And she decides to walk on the Redwood Highway and revisit the place where she was married by the sea and visit the motel that they stayed in for their honeymoon and so on. And it sort of helps her to understand where she is in her life and the tragedies that have happened to her, which are really horrendous, and to kind of take a step forward and examine her life. And it was fascinating for me to do because I'm a widow as well, and I felt very close to her. Not that I'm that much of a walker. I'm more of a reader. But I had a wonderful time doing the film. And what is so terrific is when you get to be my age, you're mainly, apart from theater, I always do leads in the theater, but in the cinema, you're more or less relegated to grandmothers and mothers. And to have the lead in a wonderful film was really thrilling for me. At this point in my life. So, and it's such a success, which is marvelous. It's in its 10th week in Portland, Oregon, which is extraordinary.
Well, it's one of those films, Shirley, that it's so compelling to watch it unfold and to get to know this character. But, you know, I was thinking as we were watching this, You're in almost every scene. I mean, there was a lot of work that you put into this film.
Yes, it was. I go on and on, walking and talking, I think. But I really, really am proud of the film, and I'm glad people are enjoying it. It's on Netflix and all the other flicks, you know, the iTunes and the this and the that, which is marvelous. I have a lot of my relatives in Kansas who are watching it.
Folks, we're talking to Shirley Knight, who is in her late 70s. I think she'd be okay with us telling you that. Has had an amazing career and is still going strong. You know, she's been in, Bill, Playhouse 90, 77 Sunset Strip, Hawaiian Eye. She was in Desperate Housewives. She turned down the role of JR's wife in Dallas. I mean, this is someone who is
big time,
intertwined into the history of television. But I want to ask you about your film work, if I may, because you were in As Good As It Gets, Diabolique, Divine Secrets of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood, and Paul Blart Mall Cop, which is an Adam Sandler film. He also cast you in Grandma's Boy. What were you thinking?
I plan to give him a bit of trouble for all of that, because I told him, I said, you know, I'm not funny. I'm a serious actress. I'm not funny. He said, well, I want you in the film anyway. And when I did Mall Cop, he and Kevin James said, would you please wear a fat suit? And I said, okay, because Kevin wanted me to look more like him. So I wore a fat suit, and we now did the second one. We just finished doing in Las Vegas, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Oh, man.
And I said, oh, my goodness, it's going to be hot. Do I have to wear a fat suit again? And the costumer said, oh, no, Kevin's lost weight.
Well, let's go from two icons. You know, you got Paul Blart, and then, as we said in the intro, you beat out Meryl Streep for a Tony. I mean, if that were me, I would put that on my forehead and tell everybody who came around. Had to be a very proud moment for you.
You know, it was such a wonderful play that I did, Kennedy's Children. It was such a terrific part, and it was lovely. But of course, yes, one doesn't think in terms of beating people. But,
but it was Meryl Streep.
Hey, Shirley, we're down to our final minute, and I'd love to ask you what's next, but even more importantly than that, I want to, you know, what is the moral of your story? I mean, you seem so happy, you're so engaged. What can we learn about life from you?
Well, I think acceptance is the most important thing when one gets older. I think that we, people in general, have a tendency to feel bad as they get older, and they want somehow to go back, and that thing of going backwards and wishing that you could do it differently, which I think I certainly do, and I think most people do. I think the main thing is to really try to be open and honest and caring about people, and understanding what life is. You know, that we're here to help each other. We're here to take care of each other and to bring joy to people. And we have so much tragedy in our every day. Something else happens that is sad.
We're going to have to leave it there. I mean, you have brought so much joy to all of us, and you maybe never more so than in your most recent film, Redwood Highway. Folks, it's available on DVD and video on demand. Thank you to the great Shirley Knight. And before we leave you today, our takeaway is from the great Pablo Picasso, who was still painting masterpieces until shortly before his death at the age of 91. Picasso once said, quote, "The meaning of life is to find your purpose, and the purpose of life is to give it away." We call that moving forward and giving back. Yeah, he was a little more eloquent, but the point is this, folks. To really help others, you have to help yourself first. So get out there and start growing bolder, and we'll see you next time.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming rope, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. Joe.